could be a very interesting morning here on the news, according to me. Yes, once again, here we are. We are here. Here we are. We're here because that's where we are. We're not there. We're here because we're not all there. That's what happens, that whole thing. We have an interesting show here. It is Thursday, Theological Thursday here on the channel. I have grown out my beard while I'm on vacation here, so I would be more theologically, I would look more philosophical. Let's put it that way. I look more wise and old, an old sage with the beard, just sage that stops shaving because he's lazy. I got the old beard thing going on here. We have interesting show for you today. Only because the background noise could be very interesting. My wife is possibly waking up. I'm not sure if she's going to come through the door here at any moment. I have no idea. I never know. She'll come bursting through the door. I want to go for a walk. She'll come bursting through the door looking for something to eat. She'll come bursting through the door just because the door is bursting. I don't know. Not sure what to expect. Probably in the middle of my show here at some point, we're going to have the appearance of the wife, which you will not be able to see because you're on. All you're going to be able to hear my shocked and stunned reaction as she comes through the door. I have chai here with my Almond Joy creamer. I have a dog by my side that I'm rubbing his ears because he seems to like that. I think he has a yeast infection. We have another dog on the floor. That's our old dog. He's just passed out. He doesn't care. Yeah, he's just, we'll see what happens here. If they remain, they've had their breakfast. Everything's been done. I've got my chai with my Almond Joy creamer. I've got my sweet peach tea, fresh. It's still good. It's still really good. Probably going to get me through at least another couple of days. Probably make some more tomorrow, maybe possibly. That's what we've got going on for right now. Basically, Thursdays are to talk about theological issues. There's really nothing else, nothing big going on that I'm aware of in the news that we're going to talk about. I know that we may very soon have the Lake of America, or Lake America, like Lake Michigan, Lake Ontario, Lake Superior, Lake America. It may happen. Which is hilarious when you think about it. Just that Trump would troll them like that. This is what I enjoy about these non-establishment types. I just think Trump doesn't care. He's just going to do what's right. What he thinks is right for the country. It's what he thinks is right. It may not be what we all think is right, but I kind of appreciate the approach. I just appreciate the fact that it's, at least he's got the fortitude to do such a thing. Anyway, as we get on with our show here, we've got a little ditty I'm going to play, and then we're going to get on with things, just kind of get into the show. And I am still down in, the wilderness area of Syracuse, Indiana. Near Lake Wawasee, Lake Syracuse area here. Just really slumming it here. We actually have the, I think we have the one of the smallest and oldest motorhomes here in this campground. It's a brand new campground. It's very, very nice facilities, full hookup, full everything. It's like being home, only you're not, which is kind of nice. If I was home, I'd be doing some other things, but it's nice to just kind of get away and disengage and do different kinds of work, like trying to make food stuff. That's interesting. Living in a smaller box with animals, it's quite the experience. Not a whole lot around this area. We did walk into town and down to the beach yesterday. Went for about a 3-mile walk. Me and the dogs did. Nobody else went with us. I was just by myself because the wife was working today. She's going to be here all day, so. We'll probably do something at some point. I don't know where we're going to go. Probably go for a fairly long walk at some point, maybe. And they have this big bacon thing in the evenings here. And on Thursday evenings, they cook bacon down by the the main office area there. They got this big bacon cooking thing. So we're going to eat a lot of bacon tonight, I guess. Or at least we're going to go over to the social event, see what's happening over there. Once again, folks, let's play this little ditty. We'll be right back right after this.
Welcome to the news, according to me. Pull up a chair, I'll share what I believe. I've done my reading, I've got thoughts or two. But I'm not your doctor, so don't go blaming you know who. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer. I'm definitely not your financial advisor. These are my opinions, not the gospel truth. Entertainment only, baby. That's the news, the news according to me and me alone. Now let's get started. Ooh, welcome to the show.
Yes, but I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not any of those things. And I'm certainly not a certified theologian, but I have 64 almost 64 years of experience in life, so I'm going to share what I can with you young whippersnappers out there. Because back in my day, we used to just suck it up and do it. That's how we did it. Yeah. Anyway, the crazy kids, get off my lawn. Turn these lights off. I have, I don't know what else is out there. We're going to jump right into the callers this morning. I think it's probably the best way to do this. I'm just going to go down the. What do I want to do here? I'm going to go backwards on the list. We're just going to talk to Elena first. Let's see what Elena has to say. Here in she jumps right in usually. Let's see what she has to say.
Good morning, Kevin.
Oh, hello,
long-time listener.
Yes,
I've been studying the parallels between our current moment and the Third Great Awakening of the 1850s, 1900s.
Uh-huh.
Both periods featured rapid technological change, social upheaval, and institutional church decline before revival. What lessons from that awakening do you think are most applicable to sparking genuine spiritual renewal today, rather than just political activism?
Boy, that's a good question. That's really a good question. That's interesting that you draw that parallel. You know, I think one of the things that we're about to see, and this is, I think people are a little bit afraid of this technology. What you see here is it's kind of one of those deals where we do see a kind of a decline in church membership. And this happens especially among the youth in our nation. Most of the great revivals have been a kind of strange mix, but most of it has happened with youth. In fact, the disciples, the 12 disciples, they were pretty young kids. Most of them were pretty young, what I would call kids nowadays, college age or less. And we don't think of it that way. We think of them as these older, sages already, and that's not the case. They lived a long time after after Christ went. So it's just they were younger and younger than you might think. Now there were a couple of them that were older. But most of them were fairly young. And it's always this youth movement thing that happens. And it's interesting because youth culture does kind of swing back and forth quite a bit. And I think what we have right now is, one of the things that this technology is kind of reminds people of, hey, AI could take over, and this could be the all-consuming kind of noose around the neck. Here we are in the last days, and here's the mark of the beast, all that kind of stuff. All this stuff kind of comes together, and kind of out of a fear type thing, if you want to call it that. Just this realization, I guess, of, hey, this is for real, and this is something the Bible spoke about, 2,000 years ago, 6,000, 5,000 years ago. Things were written that are pertaining to what's happening now, and it's really, I think, what we see with technology right now is that it's more likely than ever that some of these things that nobody had an idea of how this was going to ever take place. We can kind of see now how the entire world will watch. There are places in Revelation where it says the entire world will watch when these things happen. There'll be a camera set up probably somewhere on the two witnesses, for example. And everybody will be able to watch. Everybody will be able to tune into this thing because it'll be on the internet or whatever governmental control thing is out there. It's going to force us to watch it because it's going to put it on every screen. It's interesting how this is a time of technology where this can actually happen. When you look at satellite coverage, everything, it's the internet coverage is covering the world now, basically. The pieces are definitely falling into place to make all this possible. And so I guess when kids start to realize those things and they start to remember, hey, Grandpa talked about this, I think that it does have a tendency to cause a... But here's the thing.
Sorry, I don't understand.
Yeah, I'm not talking. The thing that it makes it kind of interesting here is how... I think that we have a fractured nation where we're going to see a part of our society is going to be drawn into a revival. The other anti-societal group, anti-American side of the group. Now maybe it'll happen the other way around. Maybe the anti-American group was going to have experience the revival. One of the segments or the other is going to, experience a revival. Maybe both will. Maybe there's going to be this great reconciliation we're going to see through a whole revival thing. I don't know. I know there are very dissatisfied people on both sides of this polarized nation. We'll see what happens with this. But I think there's a chance that there's a revival that could happen on one side and not on the other, or there could be an uprising of protest on the other side, which I wouldn't be surprised. So it'll be interesting, but I think there will be a revival. I think there will be to some extent, but it's probably going to be a segment of our population, a certain sector of our culture, not going to be the entire culture itself. That's my suspicion. That's my synopsis, my opinion, my speculation. That's all that is. It's not. I'm not basing it on anything other than just what I've observed. So does that make any sense? I guess I'll pass it off to you and let you commentate on something.
You're
real.
You're hitting on something historians have seen again and again. Youth movements have always been the engine of spiritual awakening, from the Jesus movement of the 70s back through the Great Awakenings. And you're right that the disciples were probably late teens to early 20s,
right.
Not the bearded ancients we picture. What's different now is that technology has collapsed the gap between prophecy text and lived reality in a way that previous generations couldn't fathom. So when young people connect those dots, the global surveillance capability, the speed of information, it genuinely feels like the fulfillment is happening in real time, which could either trigger revival or radicalization, depending on which direction fear gets channeled.
Yeah, kind of like what I said. And again, unfortunately, Ellen is just kind of mirroring things, but she's adding some good information here. It's not that it's been bad. So we're gonna continue on. I guess I've had my little monologue. I've talked way too long. But let's see what Chloe has to say this morning. She always has something interesting to say. Well, go ahead, Chloe.
Kevin, hi.
Yeah, hi.
So I was scrolling TikTok and there's this huge trend of deconstructing faith where like people are just walking away from church because they say it's too judgmental.
Oh.
But isn't that kind of the point, that we're supposed to have standards? I'm so confused why everyone thinks being accepting means accepting literally everything.
Yeah, you got a good question and a good point. Judgmental, what people are considered judgmental, unfortunately, there's a difference between condemnation and judgment, being discerning and being condemning. There's two different things there. And when you discern that someone is doing something wrong, they take that as judgment because they're in love with what they're wrongdoing. And it's they want to be who they are and feel accepted for who they are, which that's the way God accepts us. The problem is That's not the way he wants us to continue living. And it's a constant development, a constant growth in a particular direction. And it's not so much about where you are. It's the direction you're headed. I think that matters more than anything. Now, granted, you know, because you have your face turned towards a particular thing, you're going to continue to gravitate towards that thing. And you kind of become the thing you worship type thing. Your worship makes a bigger difference, in my opinion, of who you become. You will kind of become the thing you worship, so to speak. And it's not that we're going to become God, but we become more attuned to His heart, more attuned to what, you know, His character, and we tend to act accordingly. When you get close to your natural father, this same thing happens to people with a natural parent. They become, the closer they are to that parent, the more character that kind of spills over into their life. It's just a natural part of our society, societal living, and the way we are as creatures. It's just the way we are. So I guess to some degree, I get it, because we have a society, a population, a culture that wants to just kind of, you know, que sera, sera, live the way they are and not make any waves, not cause any problems with saying that somebody else is living wrong or that what they're doing is wrong, or and they tend to push it back and say, you know, well, you're one to talk, you're just being, you know, judge not. They love to quote scripture when it comes to, you know, them living the way they want to live. Don't judge me, you can't judge, you're a Christian, you can't judge. Well, yes, we can judge with righteous judgment. The whole thing, there's a difference between, like I said, it's just, like I said, a difference between condemnation and discernment that we kind of forget to insert into the context. So that's kind of where I come from with it. It has always been an issue when you try to tell somebody they're doing something wrong.
Okay, so this is literally the vibe on social media right now. Everyone's like, don't judge me. But also, everyone's judging everyone. And it's so hypocritical.
That is true.
Because nobody wants to actually have the conversation about what discernment even means anymore.
Yeah.
I think you're hitting on something real where people confuse. You're calling out something I'm doing with, you hate me as a person. And honestly, that's like the core issue with how we talk about anything online. It's all or nothing. No nuance.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, that was an interesting parallel there that you made, that people they want to say, no, you can't judge me, you're so judgmental because you're a fascist, bigoted, what do you're a bigot, fascist, whatever. They start going down this whole list of things that they judge us to be. So it's kind of like I say that doing this particular thing is wrong, and then you start calling me names. Which, when you place a name on someone, that is judgment. When you start saying, you know what, you're a no good, lily-livered, good for nothing, you know, whatever, that's judgment. That's like saying raka. That's like saying fool to someone. It's like placing judgment upon them. When you say you're doing something foolish, and then when the person turns around and says, well, you're a fool, that's different. There's a difference there. You're labeling someone something instead of saying what they're doing is foolish or what it's there's a big difference there in I think the way it's considered to be judgment or you know trying to lovingly say, hey, what, you know, what you're doing is going to lead to, you know, to no good, this is not going to end well for you, and then they turn around and say, well, you're gonna you know what I mean? There's a very different and it's interesting because it does seem.
I found this on the web.
Tish, we'll be quiet. It does seem very, I don't know, just judgmental, hypocritical, I guess. It's just my word. I don't know why my watch has a tendency to listen to me. My phone's sitting right here and it doesn't do anything. Apparently, it thinks I'm asking it to look stuff up, and I don't understand what's going on. My computer is sitting here. It also has Siri on it. My phone has Siri on it, and my phone and my watch, for some reason, thinks I'm asking it to look things up. So I don't know what's going on with that, but it's been doing that on the show lately. It hasn't been doing it regularly, but it's been doing it on the show quite a bit. Anyway, let's continue. Let's go on with this skeptic, Leonard, who may, by the way, he might be on his way out. Don't tell him. We won't say anything, but He might be doing Uber driving with Skip here soon. I'm not sure how this is going to work out. Not that Uber driving is bad. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with Uber driving. I'm just saying he might be in the gig economy soon because he finds himself to be unemployed, which, you know, I'm probably doing better than I am. Like I said, I don't charge for this show. You're just kind of listening to me. I just do it for my own mental health. I don't try to sell you anything. I don't try to do anything. I'm just trying to be here for, you know, to stimulate some kind of conversation in your head, to be inflective and reflective and hopefully, lead us into a better place. But that's a tall order. We have all right, here you go. We got Leonard on the line, the Brit. Let's see what he has to say with us this morning. Go ahead, Leonard.
Kevin, my man, quick question.
Talking kind of
Everyone
loud.
Keeps saying we need more faith in our schools and government, but here's my pushback. How do we square that with the fact that government-sanctioned religion historically leads to watered-down theology? Are we really sure we want the state endorsing Christianity when they can barely run the DMV efficiently?
Well, now hold on here, Leonard. Let me tell you something a little bit. You're hitting on something real, but I want to tell you, but I need to push back on some things here. We have I guarantee he's going to say that. We have a few things to talk about here. First of all, people who are calling for more faith in schools, are they calling for the government to sanction it? When you make that statement, is that what's happening? Are they calling for the government to implement more faith in schools? Here's the thing. There's a difference. There's a line that needs to be drawn, and maybe it's a gray area. Maybe it's not a real well-defined line. But in my opinion, this is just my opinion, and I think it's something that you call it what you will. It's just my speculation, my thoughts. I believe that there's two. It's kind of a double-edged sword here, but let me say something. What I'm going to say here: we have there's a difference between government sanctioning a religion, telling you what religion you're going to follow and how we're going to do it, and allowing religion. Right now, it's a situation where it's kind of been forbidden in schools. It's kind of a thing where you can't even. You know, they'll boot kids out for the valedictorian gets up to make a speech and wants to say a prayer or talk about faith issues. And for some reason, that's not allowed. The school can't allow it. Separation of church and state. Well, that student doesn't work for the state. That student is a free thinking, civil rights protected individual who has the right to free speech. The school isn't telling her what to say, or him or her. It's what to say. This has happened. The school has told them you can't say this or that. You can't talk about your faith. Well, that is government creating a law or a rule against religion, which they're not supposed to be involved in. They're supposed to be, I guess, innocuous in that whole thing. My air conditioner just kicked on, so it must be getting warm in here. So that's where I kind of fall on this issue. Now, the problem with allowing that or kind of allowing teachers even to say a prayer before class or whatever it is, or that the school has a prayer. Used to be the principal used to come on and say, say a prayer before over the speaker in the morning. Even to do that, I have no problem with that. But the problem we get into is once you open up that door. Look at Dearborn, Michigan. We have a different kind of religion. Now they're requiring kids to wear, they're talking about having the girls have to wear hijabs. They have to, they have to dress a certain way in public school. That conforms to a religion, not just conforms to a kind of a moral societal standard, but to a religious standard. So it's kind of this double-edged thing here where we go down this path, but that opens it up to every religion, not just the Christian faith. So it's we have to be very cautious here how we approach this, and I think it's a good point. I think you're drawing a good point here, Leonard. I appreciate what you're saying. At the same time, there's a difference between freedom of religion and freedom from religion. And I think that there are people who want freedom from religion and not just freedom of religion. They don't respect, you know, people's rights to do anything. Let's see what you have to say about it. But that's kind of where I'm going for it. I know I said a lot there, so you got a lot to absorb. But go ahead.
Look, you're right to push back. I was conflating two different things there. A kid standing up and saying a prayer at graduation is not the same as a school mandating it. And you've got me on that one. But here's where I'm still concerned. Once you crack that door open for religion in the public square, you can't control which ones walk through it. And Dearborn is exactly the cautionary tale you're pointing to.
Yeah, well, you pretty much just repeated everything I said, but I'm surprised I got through to you on that one. Usually you push back a lot more, but because I was the one pushing back there, wasn't I? I guess, how's that feel? How does that make you feel, Leonard? Maybe we'll keep Leonard on a little longer if he starts becoming a little bit more reasonable in his responses. Now, that wasn't, he didn't really say much. He just kind of repeated back what I said, but we'll go from there. Let's go to Artie. Artie's always an interesting one to talk to. Let's see what Artie has to say this morning. Go ahead, Artie.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I've been digging into the polling data on church attendance trends, and the numbers show we've lost another 3% of regular attendees since 2024. Yeah. When you break down the demographics, it's primarily the 18-35 age bracket.
Mm-hmm.
What specific strategies do you think evangelical churches need to implement to reverse this statistical bleeding?
Well, it's definitely a good question. I wonder sometimes, the polls on some of this stuff tend to be a little bit misleading sometimes. It's very hard to capture what's really going on in a poll. When they're just looking at church attendance, like you said, it's the church attendance is where they're measuring this from. Now, there are a lot of kids they're starting their own groups. There's a lot of home group. There's a kind of a home group movement that has happened. And it's more of a smaller church, smaller group type situation that we have going on. And part of this too is that you can go to churches now and not be members. There's kind of this movement. There's a couple things going on. One is you have this what I call fast food mentality in the faith community, especially among evangelicals. And I hate to mention, but there's some large church organizations, associations, whatever you want to call them, that have this idea. They're more seeker friendly, and unfortunately, that's as far as they go. They don't really ever go any deeper than seeker friendly stuff. They want to get the large groups in there, and they'll have a larger group of people, but that you can walk in and walk out. Nobody ever gets your name. So there's no way of knowing just by church attendance. Sometimes whether there's, I mean, they count people. Don't get me wrong, they count the numbers because that's a big deal for them. But is it? You know, and then you've got the kids who tend to get a little bit dissatisfied with the status quo of, you know, the modern church. And now they're starting to see that home groups and smaller groups are really kind of where their faith is. I think that this kind of, it's kind of what I see happening, or it could be happening. I guess it could be high. I'm not saying it is. I'm saying it could be happening, and it would skew the numbers in the polls. I guess that's my big concern, is that we put a little too much maybe faith in the polls themselves, and we don't really see the big picture of what's really happening. So that's kind of where I stand with that. Now, as far as the actual movement, I was just talking about this with Elena. We were talking about how the decline usually happens right before a revival, because there's always this kind of back and forth, the waves, you might say, of faith movements, and how we get further away from God, and society kind of turns into this mess, and then we realize, hey, we need God to help us straighten this out. We start feeling the pain but at the same time, there's going to be those people who kind of, you know, AI is going to become their God. There's going to be, you know, they're going to have this whole thing where they're looking for man's technology to kind of fulfill that role and kind of outsmart that old religion kind of thing. So it's an interesting time we live in. It's going to be how this is all going to shake out. I think it's going to be more confusing for some people, but it's also going to be for those of us who have a moment to sit back and reflect. I think it's going to be an interesting time. I'll stop there. I'm going to let you have a couple last words, I guess, after this. I'm taking a sip. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Technically speaking, you're hitting on something really important.
Of course.
The measurement problem is real, and polls are capturing institutional attendance while missing the actual spiritual infrastructure shift happening underneath.
Mm-hmm.
What you're describing with home groups and smaller communities is genuinely harder to quantify, but it's also where the real discipleship is happening, which older survey methods just don't track. I'd push back slightly on the revival before decline pattern, though. Historically, it's messier than that. But your point stands. People move toward what actually feeds them. And if the megachurch model isn't doing that, they'll find it somewhere else. Whether that's a living room or, something else entirely.
Yeah, I didn't say revival before. I said decline before revival. It's actually decline. Usually we get decline into a mess, and then we go to the revival. But it's interesting the parallels that you're drawing there. I think that the mega church thing has served its purpose. I was a part of one for a while, and I was actually on staff at a mega church. I would call it a mega church, I guess. In this area, it was a mega church. It was very large, and it's now has spawned off several other campuses, as well as they have multiple meetings. I think they have three or four meetings on a weekend at the one at the main campus, and then they have they have a Saturday night service, and I believe they have three services on Sunday morning, all of them pretty much identical. And of course, then they have other campuses, and they have remote campuses where they pipe it in. I was a part of that organization for a while, and I was a part-timer just doing a thing, and it felt like I was a cog in their wheel, in their machine. I was a cog in their machine, I guess. It was about their mission, their vision, and you had to find your place to fit into it. Whereas I think it wasn't organic at all. In fact, it was very shallow with regard to, the feel-good message you would get on a Sunday morning, life applicable messages kind of thing. It wasn't really hard-hitting, kind of this really life challenging. It wasn't a life challenging message. It was just this kind of a feel good encouragement type thing, which is okay, but it doesn't get any deeper than that. When you can't go any deeper than that, that's when you start to have to wonder, we're just kind of messing around here. I know there's a lot of genuine people there who genuinely, I wish that they would just admit where they are. It's one thing to be an entry-level church that invites the unchurched or the disenfranchised, gives them an opportunity to kind of come back and kind of has this place where they're kind of this entry-level, meet them where they are, and then help them go off to somewhere else. That, if you want really deep learning, deep, study and discipleship, you're going to have to go somewhere else, or you're going to become a part of this other sector of our church. Where the deeper learning and the deeper discipleship and accountability is. That is not there in most of these mega churches. Now, there are pockets of it. There are small groups of it. But for the most part, it is not a primary goal for these churches. Their primary goal is just to meet their weekly budget, which typically is in the tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars every week. So it's all about the money machine and keeping it rolling. And it becomes a very controlling part of who they are. They don't even recognize the identity crisis that it causes within their own churches. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'll give you the last word. Go ahead, Artie. We'll do this, and we're gonna call the show. But go ahead with your final word and go on from there.
Actually, you just nailed the core problem. These massive operations are structurally incapable of depth because the machine requires constant feeding, and honest accountability doesn't scale to 10,000 people across five campuses piping in the same sermon.
Yeah.
The real insight is what you said about honesty. If a church admitted it's an entry point rather than pretending to be everything, people could make an informed choice instead of feeling like a cog wondering why the Sunday message never challenges them to actually change.
Yeah, I pretty much reflected everything I said there. But you hit on some good points, and I appreciate that. So, like I said, I was going to give you the final word, so I'll leave it at that. You had the final word, and now I continue to talk, which means I've got the final word. I never really have the final word. I always have something to say. The only thing I could say after that is, thanks for listening to the show, and be done. That's the only, and that's not going to happen because, you know, I'm going to say something. So that's, anyway, since I have the final word, I'm done. I have the final word. By the way, I'm trying to work on getting the panel discussion thing going. I might be able to do it tomorrow morning if I can. Later today, I'm going to be working on getting it on this MacBook. I guess what I've found is that it apparently is it's on the other iMac. I thought it was in GitHub. I thought it was actually out there on the web. It's not. It's living on a computer, on my home computer. So I have some agents working on the project right now. They're trying to either get it into GitHub or trying to get it moved over to this computer where I can run it as an MVP on this computer, make it portable. So we'll see how that happens. Interesting thing. I've got this. I started this app just to give you some, for those of you who are my techie fans here. I developed this app where my agents can get in this room and chat. And I've made it so that I can actually invite other people in. So I can work with clients. I can work with customers who are interested in, you know, working on making their systems a little more automated, a little more efficient for their whatever they're doing with their businesses or with their ministries. And so I've set up this thing where I have these little counselors in this room. The main one has kind of, he's kind of this, the chief of staff kind of thing. He's in there and he kind of directs the other agents, and he invites other agents in when we need them, specialists to do other things. And the client can actually chat with these agents in this chat room. They can kind of go through this whole interview process and find out more about their business. And then we kind of get all that information, put it all together, and then go back into a recommendation, you know, a proposal. Basically, here's some things you can do right now. You can do these on your own. Here's the tools you need. We can provide kind of a concierge service where we kind of help those people with those things. It's just kind of a pay-as-you-go kind of thing. It's kind of an a la carte. We'll help you, you know, install these things on your computer or help set yourself up with this. We'll help you, we'll talk you through the process and give you counseling on getting it there. And then, of course, the final stage, or there's a couple of different levels of the final stage where there's all kinds of tools we can help implement. We can package it all into a custom-made software and help you in your business. Basically, we provide the software for you. It's kind of an online software system that kind of manages your whole business. Takes phone calls after hours, schedules appointments, does all this kind of stuff in the background, and also does some of your marketing. It'll actually send. It works with any social media you've got going on. It kind of keeps your marketing going. It does all those things for you, depending on what you want in your service. And of course, those are all scaled to whatever, you know, the cost is scaled to whatever you're doing. But it's all affordable. It's all kind of boilerplate stuff. It's all kind of based on this kind of community of people who are doing this. So you know you might so I'm working on that anyway. I developed this little app myself that where my agents can get together and chat with the clients, and they have their own little channel, and they can invite the client to that channel. That's all that person can see is that particular channel room, and Odie kind of orchestrates that whole thing. He's the orchestrator, the chief of staff. What do you want to call him? And he kind of works on the whole thing, and he has this whole process that he's designed to do. So that's how that works. and it's all right now. It's all, you know, it's text messaging. It's not vocal messaging. However, that's coming soon. That will be another thing where you can actually talk to the agents and have a discussion going on. So that's kind of where things are. That whole thing. But the agent himself. I asked my agent that lives on this computer. I said something about, I'm trying to find this. I'm trying to figure out. I think it's on the iMac at my house. Is it possible to get you know, the other agent on there? To he actually suggested that the main chief of staff, which lives on his own computer, on a different computer, have him do it, and have him get in touch with the other computer or work through the SSH program to get the thing pushed to GitHub. I said, well, I can. How about we just talk to the, you know, the guy who lives on, the agent who lives on the iMac. And he's like, oh, that's a good idea. He can actually do it himself. So he himself, the agent that lives on this computer, on my MacBook, said, let me see if I can get a hold of them on Agent Chat, which is our Agent Chat team, which is what our little internal app is. He tried it on his own. And he's the one who thought of it. And then it would have worked had the other agents been in the room. Now, they were online, but they were not in that particular channel. They weren't in that room, which I thought was fascinating that he would come up with that idea. I didn't even think about that. And so it's a thing where, okay, so could that collaboration have worked? I think I still might try it. I'm going to get all three of them in a room and see if they can work this out so that we can get this thing moved over to this computer and see what can be done with it. See what they can think of. It's a fascinating idea. And we'll have to try to work on that a little bit and try to get them in touch with each other. I'll let you know on Tuesday how that all worked out on Technical Tuesday. Now, I am going to have a podcast, by the way. I'm going to have a podcast that has, it's all about the podcast caller. It's going to be a podcast on that. It's going to be a video podcast because I have to actually show what's going on the screen and kind of explain to people how it works. Also, I'm going to have another podcast that is all about our business and what we're doing with the whole onboarding and helping people with their, you know, doing basically audits of their company, assessments of their company in terms of efficiency and that kind of thing, and how the tools, the AI tools that are out there can actually help them with their efficiency. So those are some of the things we're working on right now. And so I'm going to have a couple of different podcasts on those things. They're not going to be every day. They're going to be kind of a weekly thing. Especially the podcast caller app podcast. It's more of a promotional instructional app. So once we get, you know, kind of things done with that, it won't be going to take too much longer. But the technical will be a little bit more, probably three times a week. And then my wife is also putting together a podcast for her medical industry. She's doing with her side of things. So we'll just work on those things. Hopefully I get all that stuff spun up and kind of the template's kind of ready to go. So I'm just going to do it. It's happening. Again, for some reason. Anyway, that's all I got to say, folks. Thanks for listening today, and be back tomorrow with Financial Friday. We'll be tomorrow, and we'll have take care. I will.